Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 44th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. Before I get to the show today, I wanted to apologize to all of you for not having a show last week. That wasn't the intention. There was a last-minute conflict with our scheduled guest, Tina Newton, and later in the week I found myself down for the count with the flu, and I just didn't have the energy or the voice, really, to get another guest lined up. But I'm feeling better now. You can probably tell I'm a little raspy, and please forgive me for that. I don't have a new date set for Tina's interview, but I promise I will have her on the show in the next few months as we work the schedule out. Okay, this is going to be a real treat today. My guest today is a wonderful lady and someone that I've had the privilege of working with on many occasions. Since the mid-1990s, she has served as the executive director of the Craft Yarn Council, the CYC, a nonprofit trade association that represents major yarn resources, needles, hook manufacturers, publishers, and consultants to the yarn industry. In that capacity, she oversees all education and promotional campaigns for the industry association, as well as monitors customer research and retailer initiatives. She is also the executive director of the Warm Up America Foundation, one of the industry's leading charities. Prior to joining the Craft Yarn Council, she was president of CM Communications, a consulting firm which was formed in 1988 with her business partner, Christina Holmes. They handled a wide variety of consulting assignments, including product development and product launches, market research, and numerous public relations campaigns. From 1975 to 1988, she served as executive director of the National Needleworks Association, TNNA. You've heard us talk about that, another industry group. She organized an extensive network of trade shows, education, and public relations programs. Prior to joining TNNA, she was editor of Sew Business and Industry Trade magazine, so she's done a lot. She joins us today to talk about the Craft Yarn Council, Warm Up America, and the newest Craft Yarn Council initiative, Changing Global Health One Stitch at a Time. I'm speaking of my friend Mary Colucci. Mary joins us this morning from New York City. Good morning, Mary, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Benjamin. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you on. You and I don't get to see each other nearly enough anymore, and I've really missed you.
Well, thank you. The few times that I get to enjoy one of the Stitches shows, you're so busy with various meetings that if we have to meet via phone, so be it. It's good to talk to you.
It's really good to see. I felt really bad because you were at East and I was at East, and we just did not get to meet up last year.
I know.
I'll do better next time, I promise. Next time, I promise. So how is the weather in New York City this morning?
It's very chilly. Excuse me. It's very chilly, and we keep hoping spring is around the corner. It's St. Patrick's Day, so that's not going to deter the parade that's now in progress on Fifth Avenue. But other than that, we're all waiting for spring.
Well, I think spring is, I shouldn't say this, it'll jinx it, but I think spring maybe has finally come to South Dakota. I was able to walk outside yesterday in short sleeves, and I really shouldn't have said that. I'm going to jinx it. I know I will. But
yeah.
It's great to have you with us on St. Patrick's Day. So do you know, I was asked last night, I have three redheaded children, and they're, you know, their lineage is Irish. My wife's maiden name was Murphy. Is it true that redheads don't have to wear green on St. Patrick's Day? Does anybody know that that's the...
I don't know. I've never heard that. Because just walking this morning outside, there were everybody of every hair color type was in green. So that may not be true, but we'll see.
I think it's something my son just said to not have to wear green today, to be obstinate. I think I was being fed up. Yeah. Yeah. He was having on with me and his mom. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get right into this. Before we get to the Craft Yarn Council and the great work you're doing there, I'd love for our listeners to hear a little bit more about you. So can you give us a little background about you?
Sure. I grew up in New Jersey and started out with a real love of handwork. I taught myself to knit and crochet when I was quite young, and I loved embroidery and sewing. And I remember when I first started college, there goes my frog here, I enrolled in the home economics curriculum, but didn't last in that too long. I decided to get into liberal arts, which is more my background. And after college, I moved to New York and started working for a trade magazine in the home sewing and needlework industry, and was able to kind of join my passions with my profession. And from there, I met a lot of the people in the yarn industry and the needlework industry, in addition to the home sewing industry. And when the needlework companies wanted to form an association, I worked with them to set up their first office, which was then known as the National Needlework Association. It's now the National Needle Arts Association. And I stayed with them for, as you mentioned, many years, and then went off on my own to do consulting work for companies in the business. And as a result of my consulting work, I did several projects for the Craft Yarn Council, and became more and more involved, and that led to my being offered the position of executive director. And that brings me to today.
Well, that's a nice, succinct resume, and I appreciate that. I'd like to jump in on one of the things that we talked about. I've talked about TNNA a few times on the show before, and so my listeners are more or less aware of it. I'm just going to refresh people's memories. TNNA stands for the National Needle Arts Association, and it's our wholesale show. It's a place where yarn suppliers and publishers meet retailers to sell them. They also meet designers, and there's a lot going on there. It happens now 2 times a year, and it's a fairly big show. But when you got started, it wasn't a big show. I mean, you were kind of there on the ground floor growing that. I mean, can you talk about the evolution of TNNA from when it first started?
Yeah, it started, I think the charter membership, there were 30 companies. And back when they first were organizing, there were several major yarn companies. And also, it was the beginning of the needlepoint, custom needlework, needlepoint kind of revolution, when painted canvas was just coming in, and it was a very exciting time. And it was also a time when cross-stitch was just starting, and perhaps for many of the people listening, they might remember that in the 80s, 1980s, cross-stitch was really hot. It was a brand new craft for many people, very easy to teach. And so it, as each of these trends grew, so did the organization. And TNNA gave companies, designers, an opportunity to reach out to retailers across the country. And they also provided education for the not only the manufacturers but the retailers as well, in providing venues for, as you mentioned, the trade shows. And that was, you know, the combination of the format of the shows enabled the industry to grow, and it continues to grow today.
Well, it sure has, and you know, I think, you know, we started with 30. There's hundreds now.
Probably thousands. If you think in terms of the retailers are now members of
right.
the Association. So and I know they have consultants. And so they're, I would guess, I should know, but they are associate members of the Craft Journal Council as well. But they are doing some great programs, and they continue to emphasize education.
Well, so thank you for helping get that off the ground. You know, it definitely serves the industry. And, you know, again, long time ago that got started.
Yes. It was a long time ago.
Well, and, you know, as somebody that does events, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to put together events. And when you put that first event or the first couple of events together, there's so much you have to learn and adjust. I mean, it's just hard.
Well, it was such a different time when we would do shows, and there were regional markets back in those days, in the 70s and 80s, and they weren't held in big convention centers necessarily. They were in hotels, so you you know, set up in either rooms or small ballrooms. So it was very different than what shows are today, or even a Stitches show is today, because the trade shows are very similar in nature to what you might find at a Stitches market, with booths and class programs going on throughout the day and in the evenings and in the mornings. So it's very similar. So it is a challenge to coordinate all of that, plus hopefully to get people to come.
It's always the key.
It's always the key, right.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the biggest speculation of any show. You know, you do everything right. You put a great, you know, market together. You get a good education track together. And then you just pray that people are going to be able to come, you know, based on economics and time of the year and you name it.
Absolutely.
It's very speculative. Very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's move into the Craft Yarn Council. I'm very excited to have you on the show to tell Fiber Hooligans more about the Craft Yarn Council. People in the industry, even people in the industry, are not always as aware of the Craft Yarn Council as I think they should be. And at the consumer level, I always get the sense that oblivious to the Craft Yarn Council, which is unfortunate because there's some great stuff going on there. So let's talk a little bit about the Craft Yarn Council. What is the Craft Yarn Council, and who is it made up of?
Okay. The Council, Craft Yarn Council, is a nonprofit trade association like TNNA. It's much smaller because our focus is only on yarn and its many uses. We focus on education and promotion to keep the crafts of knitting and crocheting growing and a future for the industry. And that's, in a nutshell, what we do. We have, over the years, not so much promoted our name as hopefully our programs. And that's also our focus. We've had a number of educational programs from the very beginning when the council was formed, back in the early 1980s. The first program they initiated was their Certified Instructors Program, which is still going strong today. And that was to provide a series of technique and teaching classes to people who already had good basic skills in both knitting and crocheting. And it was, again, the focus was to strengthen skills, but also to give people the confidence to go out and teach these skills to others. And that continues to be, I think, the main reason our program's a little different than other master's programs that are currently out there. We focus on how to teach. And you know, we've had, initially we offered it as an on-site program, and which generally took, you know, 12 to 15 to 17 hours of instruction. But now we also offer it as via correspondence so that you're able to complete certain coursework and then be paired with a master teacher to be, you know, to have your work evaluated and to talk to that teacher about your progress. So it continues to be a very popular program. We try to help teachers find work out there in both knitting and crocheting. So we maintain a database in the office, and if we get requests for teachers, we alert a student or a graduate of the program that an opportunity exists and try to do a little matchmaking.
Which is a laudable goal. I wanted to just step backwards a minute and talk about the nature of the membership. This is really an interesting association, and there are some things about it that I kind of want to call out and have you speak to a little bit, because I think it's incredible. I've been in other industries, software and computers and all kinds of different industries in my life, and this is a unique place because the membership that shows up here, they're competitors. I mean, they're competitors. And they get together. They pay their dues. They sit down at least once a year, sometimes more. They take off their business hats. They look across the table at their competitors, and they sit down and think about what can they do to grow fiber arts, knitting and crocheting. And I think it's amazing that that happens.
You know, what's so special about the group, and you've very much been a part of that, so you know what I'm talking about. I think there's a recognition that there are programs that one can do as a group, or that a group could do, that you couldn't accomplish individually. There wouldn't be enough dollars in anyone's budget to undertake a program like the certification program or any number of other activities that we've done. They keep that goal, that long-term, long-range goal, at these meetings. And you're right. They're absolutely, everybody's competing for that, you know, space on the shelf and the consumer. But they also recognize that you have to do things collectively if there's going to be a marketplace for any of us in the future.
I've often thought that, you know, I've never seen, well, and I'm sure there are, but I'm not very aware of any other group that has something like that. I mean, it's got to be, you know, it's just phenomenal. I don't know of another industry that has something like that.
Well, we've been told we're rather unique, and it is a interesting phenomenon, and I think it has to do with, of course, the personalities, although they have changed over the years. They love the industry, too, and they want to see it, and they want to see it continue. So we know we have to continually educate people. The crafts of knitting and crochet, you know, to us, we think it's easy, but having done some teaching myself, you know, a lot of consumers are just so nervous about picking up needles or hooks, and we have to make it as easy as possible to help people get over that hesitation, and I guess it's, you know, if you build it, they will come, and hopefully if we make it as attractive as possible, it will help encourage people to give it a try, and hopefully they have a good experience and keep coming back.
Well, I think it's laudable, and I think that, you know, more important, I mean, everybody talks the talk. You know, you sit down and you brainstorm about, you know, wouldn't it be great if we do that, and, you know, but the Craft Yarn Council is also, they walk the walk. And I want to call out one program in particular that I was, you know, involved with at the beginning of and not so much in current years that I think is pretty impressive. And I'm not sure that a lot of people actually know about it. And I'm talking about the Craft Iron Council's affiliation and work with the folks at Scholastic. I'd love for you to tell Fiber Hooligans about that program because it's really pretty amazing.
Well, we started about 5 years ago to investigate ways we could reach younger consumers and, you know, teenagers. And in order to do that, we had to get to schools. And perhaps there's no bigger or better source of getting to teachers than Scholastic. They're the largest global educational media company in the world. And they still have, you know, this link with not only high schools but grammar schools. They have materials that are used by teachers around the country and I dare say around the globe. And they helped us put together a program where we offered 40,000 free knitting kits to high school, not home ec teachers anymore. They're called, I can't even think of it, but they still had links to home ec teachers. And so we did, through with help from Scholastic, put together a program that included the yarn and the needles and a large classroom poster. It was beautifully done, four color, two-sided. It had not only instructions on it, but on the reverse side, it had the class curriculum guidelines for the teachers, so that would fit right into the what their mandates would be. And that was a big help to have that guidance from Scholastic about how we had to meet those mandates for the teachers. And there were lesson plans as well. It was astonishing that we did it a blast email, and within a couple of days, all 40,000 kits were accounted for, ordered by teachers. And we packaged them, 32 a box, you know, and so they would be for our classroom. And the response from the feedback from teachers was just so positive. And the bottom line is they couldn't have done this program because of their budget cutbacks if we hadn't been able to provide these kits. Now, we also tied the program to Warm Up America, because we knew that community service was a very important part of what the teens had to get involved in, you know, in high school. So not only did they kind of learn that skill of knitting, but they had to work together to hopefully assemble an Afghan, which would be donated in their community, but of course they could send it to us if they didn't quite finish it. But it was a very positive win-win for the teacher, for the students, and certainly we felt for our industry. Subsequent to doing it the first time with Scholastic, we went on to do it. We've done it three more times. In fact, this past fall we did our fourth program. This time we increased it to 50,000 free kits. And we did crochet for the last two times. Of course, we did knit twice and we did crochet twice. And it continues to be so well received, and our way of introducing young people to our crafts. And we know that it's not something all of them will continue in high school, but once you learn a particular, at least they are aware of it, and many will go back and hopefully take it up when they get a little older.
Well, this is so amazing. I think the figure that you threw around with me when we were having our pre-interview was, at this point, probably about 250,000 of kids have gone out to Scholastic at this point, right?
Correct.
And if you think about that, over the last 3 or 4 years, 250,000 kits went out to high school kids where they were taught to knit or crochet, depending on which effort was out there. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, what other organization could get their act together and do something like that other than the Craft Yarn Council?
What's so exciting when, because I guess even if we all belong to groups, and you know, when ideas come up, it's not always easy to execute them. When we have an annual meeting, which we do every spring, ideas that are decided on, you know, that are accepted, and we've developed the action plan that spring, they're in the works immediately. And there's not the delay that you might have or the hesitation. Once it's decided, it's fast, literally fast-tracked. And it's very exciting to be able to work that way for me. And in part, again, it's that commitment of the members to keep their eye on that long-range goal.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point because, you know, you've had some experience working with associations, and that's hard. You know, running a small business like, you know, and doing a Stitches is relatively easy, and it's not easy at all. But, you know, at the end of the day, you make a call and you go. When you're in an association like that, a lot of people have to be okay with decisions going along, especially when they're contributing resources. And what we're talking about here for something like this is, you know, the yarn companies have to decide that, okay, we're going to use this yarn this time and this yarn another time, and then we have to get a needle or a hook vendor involved and this. And then there's money that has to be spent for packaging and shipping and, you know, the buy-in for Scholastic. So there's a lot of cooperation and commitment and money that has to happen in order for these things to get done. And from my experience when I was there at the beginning of this thing, it just was a foregone conclusion that people were going to cooperate and that money was going to get spent.
Yeah, it's a lot of yarn. It's a lot of needles. It's a lot of hooks. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands. But they know that you have to make this type of investment. It's not easy. I don't mean to say it's, you know, and you know it's not easy, but they've made that commitment to the industry, and it's laudable.
It is very laudable, and it's something that I was just, you know, again, I haven't been involved with the Craft Yarn Council for a couple of years now, but really amazing. I mean, I was very proud of us when I was there and we did this thing, and I think everybody felt that way. I mean, there was some pride over that this was a hard thing that got done.
Yeah, and the companies, we have, of course, the yarn and the implement companies provided the materials, but other members and XRX too provided value-added coupons for the kids, either, you know, for subscriptions or for free patterns. So it was a nice package for both the teacher and the student. And, you know, since so much is available, you know, on the Internet now, we certainly tied that into what's available online. So it continues to grow.
Oh, it's astounding. I want to move over into Warm Up America in just a minute, but before we leave the concept of who the Craft Yarn Council is and what they do, I wanted to make a segue into standards, abbreviations and standards, because a lot of people, when they pick up a knitting or crochet pattern and they see yarn weights and all those kinds of things, may not understand that that was born out of a lot of hard work and cooperation by Craft Yarn Council members and associate members.
Oh, it was. You know, back at the end of the 90s, where the yarn market was getting very exciting for a number of reasons. You know, we were getting such wonderful exposure in the media, and there were so many wonderful things happening with our products. You know, it all of this didn't, our resurgence, if you will, didn't happen in a vacuum. I mean, the yarns were more beautiful. The patterns were fabulous. Everything just came together. It was the tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell would say. Just the right combination of things. And as an industry, we realized that we had to make it as easy as possible. We were getting lots of new people into, the knitting and crocheting. And we realized we have this language that can be very intimidating. You know, our abbreviations, our reference to worsted weight and this weight and that weight. People don't understand those terms when they're new to the industry. And we also looked at the various publishing companies, and there was, every company did something a little different. So we got together the yarn companies, the needle and hook companies, and the publishers and designers, and said, how can we come up with a more uniform way of presenting abbreviations and yarn labeling? How do we also indicate on the needles and hooks that, you know, we're becoming a global business, and what's meters and versus inches, and all of these things needed to be addressed. And it was a real challenge, and I know Elaine was very involved in it, Benjamin, so she can attest to it. But out of years of work, we came up with standard list of abbreviations. We came up with a skill level chart so that a consumer, when they looked at a pattern, would get a sense of whether it was easy or a beginner or intermediate. We also talked about what weights meant. We developed a chart that really related what you could do with a particular weight of yarn, and then assigned a particular number to it. We also worked very hard to come up with standard body measurements, which is really a challenge, but that's part of the system. And so we put that all together, and we call it our organic document, because we knew from the very beginning it was meant as guidelines. We couldn't mandate to people. We couldn't ask every company, like a yarn company, change all your labels today. But over time, we knew, and we've seen it happen. There's, you know, more uniformity in the labeling. Consumers now see a yarn weight number. They see gauge references for both knitting and crochet. And, you know, it's been, I think, very helpful for designers to have this standard measurement chart. And there's still variations. Every magazine does it a little differently, but a lot of the information that came out of the standards and guidelines in the early 2000s have really been adopted. And we also, from there, went on to come up with designer standards and guidelines. Since so many new designers were coming into the industry, and they didn't have a sense of how to approach either a magazine or a yarn company to sell designs, what was expected of them, how to write a pattern. And so we also have, as part of that, our, you know, standards and guidelines for designers to help them understand what the expectations were for submitting designs. And then we tackled symbols, knitting and crochet symbols. Again, not every magazine might do it. Add certain symbols, perhaps use slightly different symbols, but we're getting there. We're getting to the point as symbols are becoming more accepted in the U.S., that we see more uniformity there as well.
Well, yeah, and I want to, you know, again, this is a huge thing if you think about it, and somebody, you know, gets out there and does the work and puts the right people in a room to get that done. You mentioned earlier that Elaine was involved. For Fiber Hooligan listeners that don't know who that is, she was speaking of Elaine Rowley, the R in XRX, my business partner and family, who was a part of some of that, and that process Elaine talks about, you know, with a lot of deference, really. You know, she talks about sitting across the table with Marjorie Winter and other people from other publications and negotiating, okay, what makes the most sense? It wasn't about, you know, what do we want? It was about what makes the most sense. And that kind of collaboration is what it takes to be able to put out some services to consumer, which was the real point.
Right. Absolutely. Again, trying to make it, you know, to bring us our language, if you will, into a new generation, and it constantly is being updated. We'll add measurements here, or we'll change a reference somewhere, and it has to evolve, and it will.
I had a question in the chat room just a minute ago. I thought I'd voice it because it's an interesting thing. Somebody said, "Do you know if you have to be a member of the CYC to use those symbols?" And that's an excellent question. And the answer is no, you don't.
No, absolutely not. We encourage people to, you know, at the website, yarnstandards.com, you can download all the symbols and the charts. It's all there. And we encourage people, we simply ask that you credit yarnstandards.com as a reference to where you found that information. It's meant to be downloaded and used.
Yes. That was a good question. Thanks, Ron Miskin, for asking that question, because, you know, these things, these resources that the Craft Yarn Council put together, they're meant to be used. And they're not a secret. They're supposed to be out there so that we all, you know, whether we were a part of the process that developed those, we all can be a part of making sure that the consumer has an experience that is not jumbled. I mean, can you imagine what it would have been like if this hadn't gotten done, you know, with the proliferation of digital media and fonts and everybody doing their own thing? It would have been just a mess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. It just, everyone would have kept, you know, doing things their as they developed in within their own organizations, and sometimes it just takes a little, but I think everyone had a wake-up call when all of a sudden, you know, there was such interest in knitting and crocheting, and I think we realized it was something that we had to do, and we're certainly glad we did it. It's not a finished job by any means, but it will continue to evolve.
Well, that's great. And thank you for taking us through that process. I really wanted our Fiber Hooligans to understand the nature of the Craft Yarn Council, its membership, and kind of also what it's about. It is a larger service to both the knitting and the crochet community. So I appreciate you taking us through that. So let's move on, and I'd love to talk about Warm Up America. Of course, you know I love Warm Up America, and for our Fiber Hooligans that may not know a lot about Warm Up America, because, you know, this show does tend to be the Hills of Hope channel, but it does not mean that there are not other wonderful foundations out there, and Warm Up America is definitely one of them. I think the only time it was on the very first Fiber Hooligan episode I had with our friend Debbie McComber, but we really didn't get into it too much. So I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about Warm America. Give us the history and its mandate, please.
Okay. Evie Rosen, for many years, owned a yarn shop in Wausau, Wisconsin, and was making afghans for her local shelter. And she could make them fast enough. And this goes back to the early 1990s, 1990, in fact. And she realized she had to come up. There was such a need. She had to come up with a formula that could engage more people to help her in this process. And that's when she came up with her idea of breaking down the concept of making an afghan into smaller sections and then asking other volunteers to join it together. She came up with the 7x9-inch template, and from that you could combine them in different ways to create different sized afghans. And first she got her customers at her yarn store involved, and they loved it. And then she went to a couple of women's organizations. They got involved. She got a little publicity locally, then within the state. And pretty soon, she was just inundated with sections and afghans. And it's a program that just grew and grew. And she had help from the Needle Arts, TNNA, the Needle Arts Association, and they helped her share her concept with other retailers across the country. And it just continued to grow from a small program in Wausau, Wisconsin, to a national campaign. And eventually it got... There were some changes, and she was looking for a new home for Warm Up America, and the Craft Yarn Council stepped up and helped her form a 501c3 nonprofit and accepted, you know, and set up space in their office for Warm Up America. So that they now manage the program for the foundation. And Evie passed away a little over a year ago, but we have always tried to maintain her goal, which was it was a program of neighbors helping neighbors. So while this program has grown, and there are groups all across the country that do it, we always say to people, if you can assemble an afghan and donate in your own community, that's the way to go. We love to hear from you, you know, but if you can do it locally, that's the most beautiful thing you can do. But that said, we always continue to receive individual sections and completed afghans at the Craft Yarn Council office in Gastonia, North Carolina. And you know, Benjamin, since it started, we estimate that close to 275,000 afghans have been donated across the country. And that's, you know, you talk about the wonderful generosity of people in our industry. It's just incredible that people, you know, whether it's Warm Up America or Halos for Hope or, you know, any number of wonderful charities, they just support it. And it's really helped a lot of people. We just started a new campaign 2 weeks ago. We are working with Parkland Hospital in Dallas. They're the county hospital for Dallas County, and the child life specialists at the hospital have asked us to help them get afghans to wrap all the newborns at the hospital, because so many of the families have so little. They want the babies to be able to go home wrapped in a beautiful hand-knitted and crocheted afghan. So we're excited to be working on that program. We've done programs with other organizations in the past. I know you were involved with a program with Save the Children, where volunteers, Warm Up America volunteers, knitted and crocheted little baby caps, and these were distributed in developing countries through the Save the Children Health Network. So it's been a program that has helped so many individuals and families, and we've done special projects, and we continue to try to serve a variety of social service agencies and American Red Cross chapters across the country.
Well, it really is prolific. The Craft and Iron Council has done a great job of deputizing people. When I was more involved with Warm Up America myself, I was stunned to find out that we, right here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, we have a Warm Up America group that's actually kind of an active group. They're very active, yeah. And we're not alone. There's just a ton of little satellite Warm Up America groups out there that are keeping the faith and getting it done. And that's kind of unusual to have that many motivated, basically satellite branches getting it done.
Well, what has been so helpful to Warm Up America is that Stitches has always provided us with space. And I should mention, Benjamin, you were president of the foundation for several years. We probably wouldn't let you leave, but, you know, you know, you had other obligations. But, you know, to be able to be at consumer shows like Stitches has been such a help to getting people acquainted with Warm Up America. You know, we're not a very structured organization. Evie never wanted that. We, you know, groups do their own thing, but we serve as a collection point for whoever would want us to, you know, assemble Afghans, or if they perhaps don't want, if there's nothing locally they want to contribute to. So we maintain a database in the office, and as soon as we get Afghans completed, we ship them out. So there's always a need.
Well, there is always a need, but also, you know, you do smart things, and I want to give you kudos because this is really on you. You mentioned that we always provide space at Stitches, and of course we provide space at Stitches, and I want to challenge every event management company out there to make sure that you at least offer to Warm Up America, because they're getting it done, and they're great folks. You yourself can't make every single show, but you do such a great job of going out there and working with the groups or finding a guild. You're so good at working with the guilds. Out at West, you had a guild that ran the Warm Up America booth. I think it was headed up by Peter France, and I want to give a big shout-out to Peter because I didn't get a chance to see him. You really do a very good job of that, and that seems to be working for you.
We are so supportive at Craft Yarn Council of the guilds and groups, not to exclude groups either, but because there's a network of guilds through CGOA and TKGA, they're just doing some fabulous things. And whenever we have asked for help, the guilds are right there. And we try whenever we hope that, and I'm sure Peter will attest to this as well, you know, it's an opportunity for the guild to talk about their programs as well as Warm Up America, because so many guilds have charity projects every month and are doing great charity works. So I can't say enough good things about the guild networks out there, how they have helped. I know in programs that Craft Yarn Council has been involved in, they've pitched in, they've done teaching. It's been phenomenal. So I always encourage people. I know a lot of people aren't joiners, but it sure can be a lot of fun meeting up with others who share our passion and exchanging ideas and getting to know one another.
Well, and the guilds are central to the Craft Iron Council, always partners in, with the Craft Iron Council. I know you personally have been on the boards of both of the big guilds. I think you're currently a board member of the CGOA. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
And so I know that they're interested in the same things that the Craft Iron Council is, and they've been there for teaching. I think it was the last knit and crochet out we had in the Mall of America. They were our teachers, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, our research shows that when you ask current knitters and crocheters, do you teach others? I mean, the average number that an individual knitter or crocheter teaches in a year is something like amazing, like eight other people. And when you begin to multiply that to times the number of knitters and crocheters out there, that, you know, is a phenomenal number that you come up with. So I've always said the tremendous growth that we have enjoyed as an industry is because our consumers are so passionate that they share their time and talent, and it continues to amaze me.
Well, it does me as well. All right, I'd like to move into the most recent initiative that you've gotten going here, because I think it's great. Before I do this, we talked really quickly about Warm Up America. I'd like to encourage our listeners to get up to warmupamerica.org and learn more about Warm Up America. As well, we talked about the Craft Yarn Council. That's craftyarncouncil.com. And, you know, I just wanted to drop those URLs real quickly. I'll better mention them a little later. But let's talk about the newest thing that you folks are involved with. And this is very exciting because I'm not sure this has ever been approached, but it seems to be something people are talking about these days. And I'm talking about the video and the link on your main page, the YouTube video, is Changing Global Health One Stitch at a Time. Where did this come from, and what are you doing?
Well, you know, we have over the years had so many people come to us and write to us, and I'm sure you're in a position to hear many stories as well about the therapeutic benefits of knitting and crocheting. You know, I have to talk about a big shout out to Betson Corkle. I don't know if you know Betson Benjamin, but she has she's in the UK, and you know, years ago she started talking about the importance of knitting and crocheting as, you know, the therapeutic benefits. And I think she helped all of us to raise awareness about this. And we just felt, you know, she's doing wonderful work in the UK, and her website is stitchlinks.com, fabulous information there. And then we began to aggregate all of the information that's on the internet and specific to the U.S. And we were astonished when we started to do that, the number of, you know, studies that have been done and the number of articles and reports on TV that have been, that talk about the wonderful benefits of knitting and crocheting. And we started pulling it all together, talking to, it was such a wide variety of people. It's such a big topic because it covers all ages. And we know that when we did our consumer research, people always said it's so relaxing, it's creative. But then we started talking to people who have shown the palliative effects on the mind, the calming and soothing that our crafts bring to people. It was really mind-blowing. And, you know, I got to meet Carol Caparosa, who has a project called Project Knitwell in the D.C. area. And she got involved in this project because her daughter at a very young age was hospitalized with heart problems. And she's fine now, fortunately. She's all grown up and is a nurse. But what helped Carol keep her sanity was knitting. And as her daughter got older, she remembered how it brought her such relief because she said you could sit there just waiting after hours. You know, the daughter was in surgery, and she said you can't read, you can't watch TV, but she could knit. So she went back to MedStar Georgetown University Hospital and started working with parents and some of the patients and taught them knitting. And it's a program that's grown through two or three hospitals in the Washington area as a result of it. And then she did a study with oncology nurses at the hospital who suffer from compassion fatigue. Now, albeit it was a relatively small study, but they had 39 nurses. She went in there with a couple of colleagues, taught the nurses to how to knit, and they, you know, were able to keep their knitting at their stations, so at lunchtime they could pick it up, and everyone's burnout scores improved. I mean, there's things like this that are happening. And we also know knitting and crochet are good for your brain. I had an opportunity to meet with Dr. Alton Barron. He's a senior attending orthopedic surgeon here in New York at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital. And he explains how our crafts, which utilize both hands, stimulate both parts of your brain, and you know, it's that type of creative pursuits that release all of these wonderful psychological benefits for us, keep our brains active. So we should all feel brilliant, you know, if we do a little knitting and crocheting. But and it's good for kids. I'll stop talking now. But we know it's good for kids. It helps motor skills, and, you know, it's positive all the way around. And it's so inexpensive, and it's portable. So everybody
well, you
can
don't
enjoy
have to,
that.
You don't have to stop talking on my account. I wanted to make sure that we talked about a few of the components of this. If you go up to craftyarncouncil.com/health, there is more information as well as the YouTube video. The YouTube video is very well done. That's something you folks did yourself.
Yes. And you'll get to see you know, some of the people I just mentioned. And, you know, to hear them talk firsthand is quite amazing. So, you know, what we're hoping is that we can get Fiber Hooligans listeners to come and post their thoughts about what they feel is important about or their reasons for knitting and crocheting. And this place right at the website, for them to add their comments because, you know, I believe in citizen science. You know, we crowdsource so much. I think we can crowdsource a lot of information from our knitters and crocheters that will help us better understand therapeutic benefits of our crafts.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a sound hiccup there, so I'm gonna refresh the action item here again. I don't know what was lost and what wasn't, but I did hear a sound hiccup in there as well. Folks, the goal here is, and the action item I'd like to encourage you to do is to get up to craftyarncouncil.com/health. Read more about this, and then contribute. Become part of the conversation. We understand that many of these stories are anecdotal, but you get enough anecdotal stories together, and they start to form a trend. Again, what we call citizen sciences, as Mary put it so eloquently. And so I'm going to ask you, if you have if you have something that you want to share, I really encourage you to go do that.
That would be great. We hope to hear from you.
I'd love to hear about that. I'd also like it if you do go up there, go up on our Ravelry group and let us know you did, and encourage each other to go do that, because wouldn't it be great if we could get our healthcare system to subsidize knitting and crocheting? I mean, there's just one more thing we can do, right?
Absolutely, in our spare time.
In our spare time. All right, I want to step back out of this real quickly, and I want to take a little time to talk about the Craft Yarn Councils as an organization, being an advocate for both knitting and crochet. Now, again, I sometimes get blasted because my shows are a little more knit-centric than they are crochet-centric, and obviously I tend to know more knitwear designers than crochetwear designers, and that's the world I live in with Knitters Magazine and knitting books. I try to do the very best I can with stitches. Some people think I do a good job. Some people think I could do a lot more. We'll see how that plays out in the future. But despite what I've done, the Craft Yarn Council is militant in you don't ever say the word knitting without crochet. I mean, it is militant.
Yes, we have always felt that, and that was in part because we helped Gwen Blakely Kinsler start CGOA 20 years ago. It's their 20th anniversary this year. And the Craft Yarn Council helped them organize initially. And we realized how frustrated they were. You know, they'd go into a yarn shop and they'd have to put up with comments like, "We don't make yarn for crocheting." You know, and it couldn't be farther from the truth. But, it was that type of thing that was going on. So I think as the industry grew, as the variety of yarns changed, the designs for crochet became so much more exciting. It was time to make a conscious effort of adding crochet, not just adding it, but promoting it as strongly as we do for knitting. And I have to tell knitters, there are more crocheters out there than knitters, so they're as enthusiastic and as passionate, and they're doing such variety now. I think so many people assume that if you crocheted, you only did afghans. Well, not the case anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but they are just as interested in design and fabrication as knitters are. So we're delighted that you're doing a great job. I know CGOA is delighted with the fact that so many of the exhibitors at Stitches now reach out to them, and it's a big step.
It is, and it's difficult, and sometimes the effects are not always very apparent. It's hard to keep everybody happy, as you've done shows before, but I appreciate that. But I just did want to mention that folks out there is a strong advocate for both knitting and crochet. It's called the Craft Yarn Council, and so in case you're out there as a crocheter that doesn't feel like anybody is listening or has your back, you should know about these folks.
Well, thank you.
No problem. So is there anything else that you and or the Craft Yarn Council are working on right now that you want to talk about?
We are putting all of our energies behind the health initiative. We feel so strongly that we want to get that message out. So we're going to be working, with the media and retailers across the country to help show why this is such an easy thing for them to do, to begin to promote the wonderful benefits. We did a summary and it's on the website. And we love to say the truth about knitting and crocheting it's good for you. So that's my parting thought.
Okay, well, so before we wrap this up, you know, is that the last message you want to put out there?
That works.
Okay. That works for you. Well, it's a nice message. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I want to thank you again for joining us today, Mary. I it was a real pleasure, and I'm so glad that we were able to tell the CYC story to the Fiber Lugan audience and also to try to get them to participate in your health initiative. I hope I get to see you at one of the shows in the near future.
I look forward to it, Benjamin, and thanks again.
You have a great day, and I hope it warms up.
Okay, thank you.
Colucci, the Executive Director of the Craft Yarn Council. You can keep up with what's going on at the Craft Yarn Council at craftyarncouncil.com and with Warm of America at warmofamerica.org. And I hope you'll take some time to go and visit those two sites. There's some cool stuff going on. This health initiative is very exciting, I think, and it would be, you know, really great if we could get on board and make this a story that lots of people are talking about. So, again, craftyarncouncil.com/health. Okay. You know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
Happy
Monday.
I'd like to welcome back the host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again with her giggle from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, and hey, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am. You can probably still hear it in my voice just a touch.
Not much, but a little bit, yes.
Okay, good.
Only because I heard it the other day a little bit.
Yeah. For Fiber Hooligans, Tammy and I try to talk at least once a week just to, you know, see if we're on the same page and she can remind me that, oh, yeah, I have a show. No, it's not quite that bad, but we talk a little bit. So how was your week?
It was wonderful. Yesterday I got to wear flip-flops all day long. Summer's coming. Yay.
Well, that's good. And I actually went outside with short sleeves, even though I probably shouldn't have because I've been, you know, down with the junk lately. But it's nice. It sounds like it's warmer for us than it is for Mary.
Yeah, it does sound like it. And I've been watching the weather reports. It's still pretty bad in some areas, so I shouldn't really be gloating. I really enjoyed it, so what can I say?
Yeah, well, I mean, not enjoying the nice weather is the wrong way to react to somebody else's bad weather. Long as you don't gloat, it's fine.
Okay.
All right. So what did you think of Mary? Isn't she pretty great?
They're a really wonderful organization and have so many awesome projects for people to participate in, whether it's for yourself, you know, getting your teaching education to be able to teach others or to help others with the Warm Up America project. How awesome is that? And I think my topics are going to fit right in with what Mary said, too.
Well, that's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. Before we do that, I think we have a few prizes we have to give away today.
Yes. First, we need to get the prizes. Well, and this was 2 weeks ago when we had Brooke Nico on. And she was featuring her book, The Lovely Knitted Lace, A Geometric Approach to Gorgeous Wearables. We had a lot of great comments in our Ravelry group. Thanks to everybody that participated. Everybody wants the chance to experience Brooke's design. So that was, I hope she takes a moment to read through some of the messages. The random generator, pick number 6, his screen name I can't pronounce, but it's Patty from California. her comment was that she loves Brooke's designs, and she said, I really want to make the poppy shawl with the Cascade Forest Hills I purchased at Stitches. I think that this might be Patty from Stitches West that we all met. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell from the thumbnail pictures, profile picture, but I think that was her. So I'm going to message her on PM her on Ravelry, but if she will email you.
Yes, please.
Yeah,
I will. Yeah, and folks, if you've been in a previous drawing or won something and you still haven't got it yet, we had a Stitches event, and then I got sick, and there was a lot of things going on. So if we're behind on something, please email me your particulars again, or if you're a new winner, email your particulars again to benjamin@barbarahooligan.com. Please remind me what you won, because I get a lot of emails saying, yay, I won, and that's really bad for me because I'm bad with details. And please give me your contact information, and we'll get everything squared up. I think that there's only one prize out there that we haven't squared up on yet, but I'm working on it. And, just please send an email off, and we'll get you taken care of as soon as we possibly can.
Yay.
So that's great. So I know you've got a report today that dovetails into Mary's message, and so let's get to it.
Well, for the state of the hooligan, as Mary mentioned, there's been a lot of studies about how our life is improved by crafting, so that's kind of what Mary mentioned there toward the end of your interview with her. Recently, I think it was just like last Tuesday, a former Fiber Hooligan alumni guest. I'm going to call everybody that's been on the program an alumni now. John Levesay was on from Craftsy. He had a webinar on Tuesday about crafting activities that are such as quilting, crocheting, painting, knitting, how they can boost mental and health agility and slow the cognitive effects of aging. This was done in honor of National Craft Month, hopefully to encourage people to enjoy the wellness benefits from when they're crafting. And his panel included Dr. Victoria Schindler, who is a professor of occupational therapy at Richard Stockton College in New Jersey, and also his dear wife, our beloved Katie Levesay, she's a neuropsychologist at the University of Denver professor. And they had a few comments from fellow crafters discussing the correlation between wellness and healthy aging. One of the first things Dr. Victoria said was that there's been benefits as there are benefits like taking your mind off of stressful things in our lives. And with the repetitiveness of crafting, these things help us to relax also, as well as taking our mind off of those things. And then Katie spoke about the completion of products makes us feel good, which reminded me at Stitches of that room, the student banquet and the fashion show. You could cut the happy endorphins with a knife. People were so thrilled to be acknowledged. Yeah. Because people were so happy and thrilled to be sharing their finished projects and getting the reward of recognition for having done all of that. This program, back to John Levesay, talked about the other benefits where repetition helps victims recover from stroke. The cognitive training helping to bring helped in long-term benefits. It wasn't just a temporary thing. It was lifelong benefit. Also being focused and mindful of what was happening in the now, which keeps different kinds of depression that may be effective from things that happened to us in the past or worry about the future, that kept all of that at bay because we're focused on what we're doing with our hands right here in front of us. And then also slowing down high blood pressure and other side effects of stress. These things produce new neurotransmitters that increase our joyfulness. And then as we age, it helps stimulate the brain and reduces the effects of dementia, which is, I think, kind of the focus that they initially had hoped for. Be featuring. And I tuned in live. I listened. They incredibly kept the subject to only 35 minutes, but literally they could have gone on and on about this topic easily, and I would have listened intently as long as I had my knitting, which brings me to another project that I'd like to spotlight, which was another Fiber Hooligan alumni guest, Heather Ordover. She's finished a project that's available online for you to check out on the subject of cognitive anchoring. She's blogged an ebook, which tells you why knitting and crocheting and doodling is good for your brain, the repetitive activity with our hands, essentially helpful information when you're trying to listen to a lot of heavy material given in seminars and business meetings or educational situations. When we consider that our brains work so much, a million miles faster than what we're hearing, this is really helpful to have something going with our hands, the repetitiveness, to keep us focused on what we're hearing. I have the link here, and I'll post this in our Ravelry group. She's in about 15 or 16 posts. She put together current research on how well people are doing with their hands while listening and are able to retain what they've heard. She recommends using this as leverage with your boss to bring knitting into those meetings to show that you're actually going to get more out of what you're hearing from the hard work of somebody who put together that material. So I'm glad her information is probably isn't in a book form. Otherwise, it would have been outdated before the ink hit the paper. But whenever anything new on this comes along, she can add it easily to this e-book. I felt she did an awesome job of finding the information and disseminating it in a way we could all understand. So that was all really wonderful information.
Well, that's great. And it's neat that we have a State of the Hooligan segment that dovetails so well with Mary's message from the Craft Iron Council. And, you know, folks, I'm going to sort of push you to go check out all three sources, and let's keep having a conversation about wellness and concentration within the fiber arts. I think this is just one more message that we should get out there and try to help spread. So another great segment, Tammy. As usual, you're so good at getting great stuff for us to all hear, and I really appreciate it.
I think continuing the conversation would be awesome because, you know, that just makes our Mondays happy, right?
Well, and we want happy Mondays, don't we?
We do.
We do.
All right, Benjamin.
Well, thank you again for another great report, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again next Monday.
Yay! We'll see you then. I'm really looking forward to this next one, too.
Yeah, I am too. So take care, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Bye.
That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one or both of our groups. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you might have heard on the show. So next week, before we get that, I want to say something else. We had John Levesay on the show a little while ago. I think it was the first show of the new year. And during his show, his wonderful, funny wife, Katie Levesay, jumped on the show. And she was an instant hit. And she participated in this health seminar that John put together on Craftsy. She is not a fiber artist, folks, but she's great. And so I have made the decision to have Katie on as a guest on the show. And we're just going to be talking about whatever Katie wants. I understand that the mandate may not be clear, but as I always said, anything interesting. So you should be looking for her in the future. Next week, we have an incredibly special show. And this will be a pre-recorded show, but... So there will be no live chat room, but my guest will be the iconic Barbara Walker. I know, I'm just nervous about the interview myself. There is so much to say about Mrs. Walker that it is difficult to give her a brief introduction, but I'm going to try. She has been an idol and guru to knitters worldwide for decades. The first of her many comprehensive collections of knitting patterns appeared in 1968, but that is really only part of her impressive list of achievements in a variety of fields. She was born in Philadelphia in 1930. She studied journalism at the University of Pennsylvania and later worked for the Washington Star in Washington, D.C. It was there in the 1970s that she became interested in feminism while working with a local hotline that helped battered women and pregnant teens. After relocating to Morristown, New Jersey, she became a teacher of the Martha Graham Dance Technique, the first of her many notable and respected books on feminism, spirituality, and myth was published in the mid-1980s, as was the Barbara Walker Tarot Deck, for which she supplied the illustrations. Mrs. Walker's complete writing career has been split between amazing knitting books produced in the late 1960s through the mid-1980s, and women's studies and mythology books produced in the 1980s through the early 21st century, and her influence continues to be felt by more than just the fiber arts world. I am thrilled to be able to get a chance to visit with Mrs. Walker on this very special pre-recorded podcast. I am actually still putting together the list of things that I'm going to talk to her about. I'm trying to make sure that we don't have an interview that's 4 hours long, which could be very easy for this fascinating woman. So I hope you'll tune in for this show next Monday. It should be amazing. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.